Then the governor's soldiers took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole company of soldiers around him. They stripped him and put on a crown of David. Then they rolled a crown of thorns and set it on his head. They put a staff in his right hand and another in front of him to mock him. Hail, King of the Jews! They spit on him. They took the staff and they struck him on the head again. After they had mocked him, he took off the robe and they put on his own clothes. And then they led him away. As they were going out, they met a man from Cyrene named Simon. They told him to carry his cross. They came to a place called Golgotha, which means place of the cross. There they offered him wine to drink, mixed with water. And after tasting it, he refused. When they had crucified him, the divided of his clothes and cast them off. And sitting down, they kept watch over his clothes. Above his head, they placed the written card, saying, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Two robbers were crucified with him, one on his right hand and one on his left. Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, "You who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself. Come down from the cross if you're the Son of God." The same way the chief priests, the teachers of the law, the elders mocked him. "He saves others, but he can't save himself. He's the King of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross and we'll believe in him. He trusts in God. Let God rescue him now if he wants him. For he said, 'I am the Son of God.'" The same way the robbers who were crucified with him also keep free from sin. From the sixth hour until the ninth hour, darkness came over all the land. About the ninth hour, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani," which means, "My God, my God." And some of those who were standing there heard him. They said, "He's calling for Elijah." Immediately, one of the men got his trunk. He filled it with wine and vinegar, put it on a stick and offered it to Jesus. The blessed said, "Leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to save him." When Jesus had cried out again in a loud voice, he came up. At that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook and the rocks split. The tombs broke open and the bodies of many holy people who had died were raised to life. They went out of the tombs and after Jesus' resurrection, they went into the holy city and appeared to many people. When the centurion and those who were with him, who were guarding Jesus, saw the earth and all that had happened, he was. Or it's particularly noted, verse 36. There's so much here that we can't take it in. It'll take an eternity for us to understand what was going on in the dream of Easter Sunday. But I wanted to pick out just one thing for us to wrap our minds around this Palm Sunday morning. Something for you to think about this week. As you look again at the Easter story, at what Jesus did for you, as you remind yourself again of the events of the Passion, and not just talk about the story, but to familiarize yourself with the events I want for us to notice verse 22. He saved others, they said, but he can't save himself. I want for us to stop and say that God is going to save us into the world of meaning. First of all, I want to look at that first part of that sentence. He saved others. Then secondly, I'd like for us to consider how very small it was to consider the saving of others. And then thirdly, to see on a deeper level how very true it was to consider the saving of others. First of all, then, he preached, teachers of the law, and he saved others. Consider the scene, what's going on here. Between many depictions of it, a hill, barren, with three crosses on it, and there traditionally the scene in the tethered cross, the one who calls himself the King of the Jews. The cross, of course, was the symbol of change. Those who were nailed to the cross were hung there naked, exposed to all the scene. The mocking is part of the punishment. Three groups come to us, Jesus and others, at this Friday morning. You notice how they are distinguished. In verse 39, you have the passing crowd. Those who are on their way in or out of the city. Those who are acquainted with this Jesus, a very famous case, heard about it. They have their insults of her. Notice verse 39 and 40. Those who pass by, just on their way past, not standing around, those moving past, hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, "You are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days. Save yourself. Come down from the cross if you're the Son of God." Then we have teachers of the law, in verse 21. The elders, those who are the religious leaders, they're not just passing by. They're at the very heart of it. They're standing there. But you notice the Jews who, with all their robes and their glory and all their vision, cast aside all their vision. So great is their hatred. And they reduce themselves to the rabble of the crowd, yelling and screaming and hurling their insults. You notice they even go a step further. At least the people who pass by address them. In none of the four Gospels is there any record of the chief priests, the elders, and the teachers of the law ever addressing Jesus on the cross. They only talk about him. They don't even seek to speak directly to him. So great is their hatred. And they say, "He saved others, so he can't save himself. He's the King of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross, and we will believe in him." That's the first the law of forgiveness. Even the two who are hanging there on the cross beside me, and even verse 44. So goes God to keep us off, keep them. Even these, they take out what little bit of gold they have left. In that crowd, there are many who have testified to Jesus. There could have been standing about that cross there alone, formerly. He now walks. A man who said, I was carried in on a pallet by my friends from Jesus to Jesus. And we couldn't even get near it. My friends had to carry me up to the roof, and they opened up the tiles in the roof, and they let me down to that pallet, and they took me right there, through the Jesus, lowered right through the crowd. I'll never forget how Jesus put it down. Now the rest are all questioning and muttering and mumbling to themselves about how they are going to do that. Jesus knew what they were saying and said, if anything you need to do, do the same thing and say that. In the time of his power. One day Jesus passed out of the temple with his disciples, and while they speculated on the cause of his blindness, Jesus said, I'm going to meet this man Jesus, and he came to me, and made clay out of the spirit, told me to go wash in the pool of Siloam, and I went to wash. And when they threw me out of the temple, Jesus taught me, and he came out. There could have been in that crowd a man who said one time, I was possessed with 2,000 demons. I used to live in the tomb. One day Jesus and his disciples came over, and they saw me there in the tomb, abandoned by all human society. Jesus came to me. He said, what is your name? Jesus took those demons and he cast them into 2,000 pigs, and they all hurled themselves over the fence. Now friends in the town, thanks for what he did, threw him out of the roof, and fled out of the roof. And he came to me, grabbing my right hand. Could have been in that crowd, 13 years ago. Buddha said 2 years ago, and as I lay dead, Jesus came to my home. And he said, young girl, Jesus gave me life. He gave up. He gave me. John, you know this is true. John, as he stood there, might have thought, man, he said, I remember that day that he called me to my kitchen. I remember the night that we were in a boat out on the Lake of Galilee, and one of those sudden windstorms come into that area, just up without any warning. And all of a sudden, there we were in six waves, and the wind was all about us, and we wondered if we'd ever get out of it. Jesus came across the water. He came to us in the city, and he spoke a word. It was calm, the wind, and the waves. In the very elements of nature, the wave is there. No doubt about it. People there testify right and left. They say the false. And there were those there who knew this was false, but knew that while they could say he saved others, and many could testify to that, that it was foolhardy to say he was false. Jesus himself said that in John 10, I'm the shepherd, and I lay down my life. No one takes my life from me, but I give my life. We read that Jesus came and picked up the scroll of the law that he read from Isaiah 61. How the Messiah would come to preach the good news to those who were in prison and blind. And he had proclaimed liberty to the captives. But then after he put it down and he said, oh, that's very good. Good preaching. Keep going. He said, well, you know, there's another part. And he said, you're going to ask me now to do some work with you. Jesus told him how the prophet was not without honor, except in his own country. He told how God had healed Naaman as a priest of healing when his own people wouldn't believe him. And the people tried to stone him, and they tried to kill him. And Luke 4 tells us that Jesus was going to pass right through them in the name. He had no power over them. Could he save himself? In John 8, the religious leaders themselves were in a controversy with Jesus. Do you remember how they were talking about who he was, and Jesus talks about how before Abraham was, that Jesus existed, and used that phrase, I am, phrase declaring his own deity. They got the point, and they picked up stones to stone him. John 8 tells us that Jesus hid himself right from them, right in their midst, and he said, even when they came to take him prisoner, we read in Matthew 26 that when they came out with their swords and their spears in Matthew 26, verse 50, Jesus said to Judas, friend, who is he paying for? And the men stepped forward and seized Jesus and rescued him. And with that, one of Jesus' companions reached for his sword and drew it out and struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his ears. Put the sword back in his face. All who draw the sword will die by me. You think I cannot call on my Father and he would have once put at my disposal or to sell Jesus' days of 72,000 days? But now then, how would the scriptures be fulfilled and say that it must happen in this way? Don't think that I'm helpless. Don't think that I can't save myself. It's not even a question. All I have to do is speak the word. And there'd be 72,000 angels here to wipe out this team band of Roman guards and temple guards that have been sent to expect. Well, that means you see an idle vote. Jesus preached, but remember, that Peter cut off that servant's ear. Luke tells us that Jesus then said to the servant, he touched the servant's ear, and the ear was restored. And Jesus, in that miracle of restoring the ear whole to the servant, changed the tone. Couldn't I get the point? Imagine going out to that somebody. Somebody tries to defend him, cuts off his ear. And he says, no, that's it. That's it. I'll just put a 2,000 angels here in a minute if I wanted to. I'll just tell you that, oh, you who lost your ear trying to catch me, here's your ear back. And he demonstrates that in that his power. Couldn't save himself. But Jesus almost had a trial to be crucified. You remember when he came before the trial of the Sanhedrin? They clamored all about, running along, trying to get all kinds of witnesses, false witnesses, to say something that would be worthy of attention to justify. And everybody was disagreeing and contradicting themselves, and they were getting more and more frustrated, and they're tearing their hair out, wondering, what are they going to do? They can't let them put through their fingers now. And finally, in the last desperate measure, the high priest of all just asked him himself, who do you say you are? Peter the son of God, tell us. Just without any hesitation. If you tell me, you're not going to believe it. But now, come to tell us that. The next time you're going to see you, it's going to be on the clouds of heaven. Coming with my Father, and your power, and your life. Show me this. And he condemns his staff. Jesus hadn't opened his mouth to condemn himself, they could not have satisfied. And they went to Pilate. Remember, Pilate desperately tried to release Jesus. Pilate he's nervous about the whole affair. He doesn't like it. He smells something dirty in all of it. And he doesn't like it in fucking to be Jews too. I'm telling you, in John chapter 18, that Pilate, being very nervous about this whole thing, wanted to have Jesus killed. You remember then that in John 19, after Pilate has tried to do this for some time, that the Jews happened to mention that we have a law, and according to that law, he must die because he claimed to be the Son of God. Now, Pilate was nervous before that. But when he heard that, he began to sweat rather profusely. Now, this guy is the Son of God. Isn't it interesting that here a Roman, hearing that accusation, doesn't laugh at all, but rather becomes quite nervous? He's something about this man who seems consistent with that kind of thing. So it's John 19, and Pilate heard that he was even more afraid and went back inside to the palace and said to Jesus, "Where do you come from?" Jesus even you speak to me, Pilate said. Don't you realize I have power either to free you or to crucify you? He's trying to get Jesus to play along with him. I don't want you fighting on any account, but especially I don't want you hitting little Billy. He's only half your size, and it's just been discovered that Billy has this very rare disease, and if you laid one on him, it might kill him. We don't know that yet, and I don't want you telling him, but I don't want you hitting him. They go out to play, he's the first person to run up. And little Billy, jumping up and down. Just about making it up to your neck, he's jumping. And he starts egging you on, starts controlling you, starts calling your name, starts calling your family. You don't want to fight them. They don't fight them. He insults you, he begins to call you vile, filthy names. And he says you're a coward, you won't fight me. Why won't you? And one reason why you won't fight me, because you're obedient to your dad, because you don't want to kill him. You don't want to harm him. Because of your love for him, if you don't say it. You can't tell him. It's just he's egging you on. He's egging you on. And then finally, he starts cursing you down. And the one who told you not to fight him, he was concerned for him. That's what Jesus said. So you read in Matthew 27, there in verse 44, verse 43. And after they tried to mock and insult Jesus with everything they said, then they say, you trust in God, let God rescue him now if he wants him, for he said, I'm the Son of God. But you hear him crying that your own father's given up on you. And your own father's abandoned you, the one that you said is your father. So they mock the father. One thing to be told of yourself. It's another thing to have the person you love know to be told of yourself. See the words of the psalmist in Psalm 42. My bones suffer mortal agony as my bones pump and pain to me all day long. Where is your God? The psalmist is saying, hard enough. But I don't see any evidence of God. I don't feel his presence in my life now. But in all of my despair and in my trials, my enemies are taunting me, saying, where is your God? How much more? his enemies to say to him, where is your God? Where is this one that you say you have such a special relationship with? You save others, but you can't save yourself. Only you can save yourself. How difficult. In his inability to make good with his claim, that precisely the moment that he's fulfilling them all. You ever realize that? Notice the three things that they say he's unable to do. And at that precise moment, they were exactly the three things that he was doing. First of all, in verse 40, they say, he said you were going to build a temple. Verse 40. You who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself. Well, they got a lot of mileage out of that. There's only one record of it in John 2, and it's back in the beginning of Jesus' ministry. He was 3 years later. They're still quoting that. There was a number of times that he was in the gospel. They really liked that ministry. It was good for lots of that. And here's one who says that he's going to rebuild Herod's temple. That we've been working on for 46 years. And he's going to do it in 3 days. But of course, they missed the whole point. Because at that precise moment, Jesus is in exactly that spot. Because he would rebuild the temple in 3 days, in 3 days of his time in the tomb, referring in that temple to his own body. Because after all, what was the temple? The temple was the place of the presence of God. And Jesus was saying, my body is the true temple. My body is the very presence of God. God is in me. And I am God and man joined together. And Jesus was saying, I'm going to raise up this temple, the true temple. So at that precise moment, Jesus is in the process of letting that temple be destroyed. Jesus was allowing that temple to be destroyed so that the earthly temple would no longer be there. He was allowing his temple to be destroyed so that at the moment of its destruction, the very veil of the temple would be rent, and the way open into the holy place would be made for sinners to belong to him. Jesus saved us by the destruction and the raising of that temple. So that you and I could enter the Holy of the Holies in the temple. We have been a true house because he is born of sin. So in order for Jesus to rebuild the temple, he can't save himself. In order to save us, he can't save himself. You notice the second thing that we're mocking is his clothes. Notice in verse 40 also. Come down from the cross if you're the Son of God. And then in verse 43, he trusts in God, let God rest your mouth, he wants him. For he said, I'm the Son of God. How is this? God, Son of God. If you think of anything when you think of God, you think of power and majesty. And if you think of anything when you think of a cross, you think of powerlessness, the very hands and the feet being nailed to that cross, absolutely unable to do anything, even eventually to breathe. And you certainly don't think of magic off the cross. You're so crazy that no Roman citizen was ever allowed to be crucified, no matter how great the crime, because he was considered such a crime. But here is God on a cross. How ridiculous to say it is to me. To say I'm the Son of God, and then to be on a cross. You see the ridiculous contrast in this? Unless you understand the Bible at all, if you understand the God of God, if you want to see my glory, if you want to understand the measure of my glory, I don't count the number of species of insects on the earth. I don't count the number of insects in the way that they can multiply or the fish in the sea. I don't take and analyze the parts of the human body and see the bloodstream and the brain and all the various magnificent parts of that species and the universe. I don't look at the measure of the stars and their power and their distance and the energy that's emanating from them. I want to see the measure of my glory. Because of the cross, you see that God became man in that place. That God himself gave up that glory in order that he could think and think. And that not only could God design and think of such a plan so that you and I would not serve the due punishment that we deserve for all eternity, God, but not only could he imagine, not only could he, but would he. Here you have God in fact carrying out that plan, giving up all of his glory to the vilest extent that you and I could become. The Son of God, Jesus, so that you and I could be his adopted children and bloody revenge. So he must refuse to save you. Then finally, you see, in verse 42, the third time. In verse 42, they mock his claims to be the king, isn't it? Saved others, they said, and can't save himself. He's the king of Israel? Let him come down now from the cross. So, remember this, I can't say fine, he says, this is Jesus, he's the king of Jesus. This is what he has to do, he's not the king, hanging on a cross. But again, it's to miss the whole point. You see, it's exactly because Jesus was the king of Israel that he did have to die. Because if he said again and again, where they didn't hear him at any point, my kingdom is a spiritual kingdom. And in order to conquer and to rule and to reign in that kingdom, I have got to gain it spiritually. And the only way that I can do it is to bring the spiritual battle that's been going on since the Garden of Eden to a climax. To face the foe in deathly hand-to-hand combat and to ransom and to win the kingdom of my people. For the king of Israel, the greatest kingdom, must bargain a ransom for his people. To pay for that kingdom and redeem it from Satan, who is usurping and ruling. The king of Israel to establish the kingdom. He was not. So that we would be made his subject, brought into his kingdom, so that he would be our king, to save us who can't save themselves. So he did that. In order to save us, and in the destruction and the raising of the suffering, we become king. In the slaying of the king, we become king. And in the murder of the Son of God, we become king. Because the king of God is king. All of you can imagine how in the balance of whether Jesus would yield. If for one instant, to those insults, Jesus gives up and says, to hell with them. They deserve hell and I'm coming down and I've had enough. realize once again that Jesus could have been anything. But Jesus was never taken captive. Jesus laid down. For it took infinitely more power to stay on that cross than it did to come down from the cross. It took more power and more majesty and more security for Jesus to endure that mockery, knowing that at any instant he could come down. Have you ever responded personally to the sacrifice and the offer of salvation that Jesus Christ has given you? He gives so much of it to deliver. Jesus died for sin. Come to him. Give to his sin to measure of his sin and measure of his sin. And if you've never responded to Jesus Christ, the faith of the weak, the Jesus, God, come to us. Give your life to me. Hey, what would that be? The one who would reject that power. His limit is gone. You can't remain this. You can't say, I don't want to give my life to him now, but I don't want to reject that either. Cannot give your life to him. Where do you stand in your relationship with Jesus? Finally, the virgin of mercy is to present your body and your life. As we talked about last week, give ourselves as an offering to him in worship. That those of whom you are owed you by the mercy of God. That's what you look at. One minute of the mercy of God. Give our lives to him, God, and his holy and holy. We love them to be with us. Why can't we not give our lives? We're afraid of what he's going to do to us. If we really give ourselves to him with no strings attached, under grace. We're afraid that he's going to hurt us somehow. We're afraid that maybe we'll get some persecution, and things won't be so comfortable. We're afraid maybe he's going to take away some pleasure to be served. We're afraid maybe he'll move us to a place we don't want to go. Call upon us to give up something that we don't want to give up. We'll call upon us. We don't trust him. He does the things he will do. We don't. If you couldn't trust him, he has loved you this much. What is it in your life that you couldn't trust him? Why is it in your life? Take a moment, God, and say, for you to interact with him, for you to respond to him, not what it is that you're holding out. Whether it's your life as a whole, you've never come to Jesus. And this morning God's speaking to you about the fact that you've been holding out something. I'd like you to give your life to Jesus. Confess that. Ask yourself. Give yourself to Jesus. Have the faith in you. Let's bow now. And let Jesus be talking to you. Christians dealing with a particular thing that we keep in mind. May He enable us now with a newfound trust in the Father to make a difference. Because we don't want to be caught up in the kind of emotion and thought that we've made to us. We'd rather speak in great generosity. Have the Holy Spirit to command us. It is only because Jesus is understand that there's no difference in our thanks to you. Because you would make us cease to stand before you forever, you became that temple, and let yourself be destroyed, and it is the end of your name. But because you wanted to be our king and rule our trust and make us king bigger, because you were the Son of God, and determined to make us the Son of God, you have yourself the Son of God. Pray for us. Pray for us. Lord Jesus, we join together in confession that you pray for us.
Today, that begins passively in the church.